You're listening to SpursCast, episode 491. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am joined here by Michael DeLeon of ProjectSpurs.com. Mike, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing good. So it's been a good Sunday afternoon so far. I'm not near any bridges in San Antonio, so I'm all right.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday did not quite pan out, I think, as we both had expected. Did you think it was going to be a blowout? We're talking about the Spurs' game one loss to Golden State. Did you think that would be a blowout, or did you think they'd keep it close? I thought they'd at least keep it a little closer.
It's hard to know what to expect, really, because you really don't know what they're going to come into the first game with, because, you know, they hadn't played super well coming into the playoffs, but it's still Warriors. But I thought it would be a little closer. And it wasn't. It kind of went wrong almost immediately. So,
yeah, same here. I had Colin Reed on the Spurs cast last time when we previewed the series, and it was so. We even talked about this, how it was so hard to figure out these Warriors because their data was all so bad without Curry. You know, with their injury situation with Iguodala, with Klay Thompson, and we just didn't know. And then, you know, 7-10 coming into this game, and then, you know, Kerr throws a wrench in the series already by starting Iguodala at point guard, so that obviously gave him a great defensive benefit. Let's go ahead and get into this a detailed breakdown of this game, Mike. Game one, where the Spurs did lose. Okay, so Spurs cast listeners, the Spurs ended up falling in game one, 113-92. I'm pretty sure a lot of you might have turned it off after the third quarter because it was pretty much over by then. In the first quarter, the Spurs already went down by 10 points with 150 left in the first quarter. Second quarter, they go down by 18 with basically a minute left before halftime. They're down by 16 going into halftime. In the third quarter, Pop made a roster change where he starting lineup change, should I say, where he started Rudy Gay in the third quarter. The Spurs did get it down briefly to 9, but then the Warriors went up by... They were up by 17 with 2:28 left in the third quarter, and that's when Pop finally pulled LaMarcus, and pretty much that was game because from there none of the Spurs' like main guys played in the rest of that third quarter or the fourth. Defensively, Mike, let's go over the defense first for the Spurs. I think that was the main issue. Is like if you looked on the stat sheet, every single quarter that the Warriors, the Spurs gave up 27 or more points in each quarter, and their baseline is always to give up 25 or less. They want to keep your team under 100. I'm going to read you some notes I wrote down about their defense in those first three quarters only, really, because I didn't, you know, the fourth quarter was not as applicable. I'll read you some notes and tell me kind of what you agree with, what you saw as well, if I missed anything. Okay, so one of the first notes I wrote was Warriors targeted Mills. So they use a lot of pin down action and pick and roll action and also just one-on-one post-ups to target Mills initially right from the get-go. Next note I wrote, the Warriors ran on Spurs misses, which created mismatches. So when the Spurs would miss these tough shots because of Golden State's defense, on the other end, the Warriors picked up their pace and they found Spurs players in different mismatches that they used to their advantage. Next note, the Spurs went over screens, tried to contain Durant, which allowed JaVale McGee to make plays by slipping off those screens and getting those layups to the rim and getting fouled a lot. Next thing is when Bryn Forbes checked into the game early in the first half, the Warriors targeted him just like they did Patty Mills. On Klay Thompson, the Spurs were so confused on defense with their communication where Klay either got wide open threes by slipping past the defender because they didn't communicate and switch, or defenders would be so overwhelmed with Klay's presence and gravity that other players like Livingston would get layups at the rim or get fouled. And the last thing I wrote, Mike, was that Monty was actually... this is actually a different note. What did you think about those notes that I just wrote down, and also did you see anything different?
No, I actually agree. I mean, it's gonna be hard for Mills, especially when you're starting against a team that doesn't have. I mean, I don't think they had anybody shorter than 6'6" in that lineup for the Warriors. I mean, when you start Andre Iguodala at point guard, and you have another, I think Thompson's at 6. I mean, it's gonna be hard for him in any situation to guard any of those guys. What's especially hard is when you have him matched up against even bigger guys like a Durant. And I saw him on Durant a few times or on even bigger guys, and it just seemed like it's kind of like, where do you hide him in that situation? It's kind of hard to hide him anywhere. So the other thing with the McGee thing was a lot of people made kind of a big deal out of that. And yeah, I mean, he did well, but it's, I think Danny Green made a point, said, you know, kind of have to give something up there, and they paid so much attention to Thompson that a lot of times McGee would get free in, so they kind of would rather take McGee making shots at the rim than Klay being open for threes, things like that. Also, I mean, Klay is just very smart. I don't think he gets enough credit for how smart he is on offense, because when they actually jump the screen and they try to, you know, they were able to react that quickly, he almost put himself out of the play entirely, so that somebody else would have more space against the, you know, another a mismatch, and he get the ball to them, and he kind of stay away just to draw his defender outside of the paint or flung in the paint. He did a really good job of that. So yeah, I mean, it was just, I think the whole Iguodala thing and starting him right away kind of set the tone for their defense, because he obviously, he's not going to be that guy that's going to go out and score a whole bunch of points anymore, but defensively, I mean, he was, it, I mean, he changes things for them, and they had that length, which really hurt and kind of put the Spurs in a, you know, bit of a bind. So yeah, I mean, defensively, they've got to definitely find some ways to change. They've got to, I think the matchups are going to be rough, especially if you don't make any changes there. So I think what your notes were pretty much right on.
Okay, yeah, and we're going to get into some potential lineup changes a little bit later when we get into the adjustment segment of this Spurs cast. One thing I wanted to note, I was trying to pull the box score. So some of the Warriors' top guys, Kevin Durant finishes with 24 points in 31 minutes. Next up, Klay Thompson has 27 points. Like you mentioned, he only missed two shots, 11 to 13. He didn't even have to take that many dribbles. I mean, the guy made 5 or 6 threes. The guy's, you know, Klay's just an amazing shooter, even with Steph out of the series right now. JaVale McGee, like you mentioned, there you have to give up something, and so the Spurs didn't bank on McGee giving the Warriors 15 points, and so I think they're going to have to risk that gamble again, even in game two. I think you have to see if he can do it for 2 or 3 games before you realize if he's going to be a real weapon that's going to hurt your team. Draymond finishes with 12, 11, and 8, and then off the bench, Sean Livingston puts up 11 points. So those are some of the offensive numbers for the Warriors. They shot 46% from three. They won the battle on the boards. They got 10 offensive boards, yeah. And that's the thing where the Spurs are pretty good. Mess. Yeah, one other defensive note I wanted to make, Mike, was that the Spurs have to be ready. You know, it's tough this series because of this one stat right here. Kevin Durant will play the entire first quarter. He will play 7.5 minutes of the second quarter and all of the third quarter. I mean, that's like, you basically only, in the first three quarters, you only get 4.5 minutes without Durant to try to survive. And even when those 4.5 minutes, Kurt staggers Klay and Draymond's minutes so well that they play those minutes when Durant is resting. So, I mean, this is a, you know, like we mentioned, the Spurs are outmatched. We'll get to some adjustments they might be able to make on defense to keep them, giving them a little bit of hope. Now let's move over to the Spurs' offense, Mike. I'm going to go through some notes I wrote down. And again, just like same thing, let me know if you agree or if you saw anything different that you wanted to add to this. First note, LaMarcus Aldridge had trouble posting up McGee one-on-one, especially with that little hook shot that LaMarcus likes to use. McGee blocked that, and he really contested it pretty well. But LaMarcus, when he gets his mid-range pick and pop shot, or just even kind of spaces out, McGee likes to stay near the rim. That's just kind of his identity, who he is as a defender. So LaMarcus will have those open mid-range shots from time to time. Next note, Rudy Gay is pretty good at ball handling, and we've kind of known that, but we haven't seen it as much. And you saw it in this game where he was able to create for himself, create for others. He had a really nice drive one time when he drew like three defenders near him, and then he slips a little past the pal right under the rim. We saw. One of the notes I'm going to write is about his pick and roll ability. Something else I wrote down, David West has no chance of guarding LaMarcus Aldridge one-on-one. That was one where LaMarcus had his way with David West. And then Rudy Gay and LaMarcus, the pick and roll, the 4-5 pick and roll, that actually worked very well in the third quarter when they ran it. They ran it like 4 times in a row against McGee. And McGee, yeah, like I mentioned, he's a drop back center. He's kind of like Powell, where he doesn't have a lot of foot speed out on the perimeter. So if the Warriors try to switch that, then Gay got him one-on-one, which gave him an open shot. If McGee went under, then Gay got a wide open jumper. Or if the Warriors switch, LaMarcus got Draymond Green in the post up. So there's a lot of advantages to that Rudy Gay LaMarcus pick and roll. And even one play that worked out pretty well that I'd like to see the Spurs experiment with is the 1-5 pick and roll between DeJounte Murray and LaMarcus Aldridge against McGee. That actually worked well too. Murray got a contested layup, but he's able to, like, just like Rudy, he can kind of beat McGee with his foot speed, going down toward the rim, and McGee's more of a drop back center. So did you see anything else on the Spurs' offensive side that you wanted to comment on?
I think that really does right there. I think it's going to be hard unless somebody else can make shots. I think that the Warriors are going to be able to continue to focus on just Aldridge, and, you know, people can say what they want about him, but when he's got McGee on him and then they've got Draymond coming over and doubling at times, and there's nobody to really make them pay for those decisions, then they're going to continue to do that, and it's going to be hard for anybody. So, somebody else in that lineup's got to got to make shots. I mean, I really like what you said about the 1-5 with DeJounte, because you and I have talked about this before. A lot of times when they do that, DeJounte's smart enough to hang around the basket and get easy baskets like that. And a lot of times Marcus will be able to find him. And usually he's got a high advantage. I mean, he won't this time, but he still got the athleticism to make some of those easy ones inside. I mean, I think Golden State did a really good job of controlling the paint. I don't have the exact numbers, but I know that the numbers were really low as to how many.
Yeah, the Spurs were, 22 points in the paint. That was it. And that's, you're right, that's really low. And then I'm pulling up the field goal percentage from the paint real quick, or the shooting percentage, should I say. Yeah, this is bad. 11 of 30 in the paint for the Spurs and only 22 points. It was not good. And whereas the Warriors shot 50% of the paint with 34.
Wow.
Some of the scorers for the Spurs in this game, their top scorer is Rudy Gay off the bench with 15 points. Like we mentioned, he started the second half. LaMarcus finishes with 14 on 12 shots. You know, like I mentioned, the Warriors did a good job of sending some double team action at him. McGee defended him well. And then Bryn Forbes, he we're going to talk about him in a little bit, but you know, he's one of the guys who he's Patty's more so just a spot up shooter. That's kind of what he is. Like, that's just his game. Whereas Bryn Forbes can kind of, you know, pump fake and then get that little mid-range jumper off, and he got it off and he got 14 points. And some of those points did come in the fourth. And then lastly, Manu played very well, even though he played 17 minutes because it was basically a blowout. Manu did well in the minutes that he was on the floor. 9 points, 3 rebounds he did have, and 3 steals there. So like, those are like your 4 guys, and that's not good. Obviously, those are your 4 best players to try to beat this Warriors team with 3 All-Stars and no Curry. Okay, Mike, let's go ahead and go into our second topic, and let's talk about the adjustments the Spurs might be able to make for game 2 to make this a little bit more of a competitive series. I think that, so I wrote down the defense adjustments. Let's start with the defense first, because I feel that's the first area of concern if you're San Antonio. The Warriors are starting that new lineup that's really long defensively. They don't have a lot of shooting in that lineup, but they do have 2 of the best shooters in Klay and Durant. So Iguodala starts at the point, 6'6", Klay at 6'7", Kevin Durant at 6'9", Draymond at 6'7", and then JaVale McGee at 7 foot. So I think that the first move you got to make if you're the Spurs is, you know, as good as he is as a shooter, I think you got to take Patty Mills or Bryn Forbes out of the starting lineup, just because that's what the Warriors want to do. First of all, they want to target those guys that have a size mismatch, and really go at them. So I'm thinking maybe like a lineup like Murray, Danny Green, Kyle Anderson, and Rudy Gay and Aldridge, or something like Murray, Manu, Green, Gay, and Aldridge. The reason why I say that is because you want to have a lineup where there's like guys 6'5 above to like 6'11, so that in the event that the Warriors do run those pin downs or those pick and rolls, you're able to switch quickly with a guy who's kind of matching length for length as best as possible. What do you think about that, about taking Patty out of the starting lineup?
No, I agree with that. And honestly, that was going to be kind of one of my notes for offense as well. It would be to take Patty out just because of, you know, some of the things that went on there. But yeah, I mean, if they're going to focus on him and try to, you know, create those mismatches, which he's going to be in a mismatch regardless of who he's pretty much lined up against. So that's going to be hard. I think for offensive reasons, I know we're focusing on defense, it's kind of hard to take Rudy off the bench because then kind of who do you turn to? So yeah, they definitely need to get someone else. I think Manu might be the right choice here to start. And I think defensively, Manu's been, you know, he's definitely a two-way player, and I don't think you can really take advantage of his defense the way they are against Mills with Manu. And he's still obviously going to have, he's still going to be about an inch or 2 shorter than any of those guys, but I think you're better off in that situation with Manu defending than you are with Patty.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing, is like, in the perfect world, you pretty much only want Patty playing when Quinn Cook plays. That way they could kind of match those 2 size for size. But I mean, like you mentioned, you have to still use Patty or Bryn Forbes, even though they're undersized, because of the offensive firepower they do bring you. And I think that's the biggest issue here for Pop, is that even if you start Rudy Gay or you start Manu or you know, where's your scoring coming from the bench? Because, you know, on the bench, if you do that, you only have Manu, maybe Forbes, Mills. I mean, there's no really scoring off the bench guys that can kind of, none of them can really create their own shot as well against this Warriors defense, but at least make them some spot up jumpers. And that's a tough task for them. It's just, you know, it comes down to the Spurs almost just being limited on firepower on the offensive end. I mean, you know, but if I'm San Antonio, I do go defense first just to kind of keep yourself in the game. Hey, if you're getting stops on one end and your offense has obviously been terrible, you can at least try to live as close, stay alive as close as possible with the Warriors, at least on the defensive end. Some other notes I wrote for some better adjustments for the Spurs. Like, one, for sure, matchup size with size. Two, better communication on those pin downs. We saw that, you know, like you mentioned, with Clay, when he's going for those three-pointers, you know, you got to make that switch fast make sure you're accurate. And then also don't double-team him and leave somebody slip to the rim. That's kind of one of the issues I think that they'll fix in the film room. I think, like you mentioned, you and I, you got to live with the McGee rolls to the rim, and you got to make him beat you. And you got, because I mean, like they said, the Spurs players, you got to give up something. And so you're banking on JaVale, who's not as efficient of a player to have to do that in consecutive games. And then also something else that the Spurs have been good at all year, but they didn't do it quite well in this game was limiting offensive rebounds. They're one of the top 10 defenses in terms of grabbing boards. Now this might be because they played small most of the game, but you still got to get on the boards and not give up 10 offensive rebounds for Golden State. What do you have anything else to add to the defensive adjustments for San Antonio?
I think you pretty much said it, and it's just going to require a few, you know, probably that one lineup change. I do want to speak to, I think a lot of people are wanting to see Derek White in the starting lineup, but I doubt we'll see that happen.
I wrote that down actually as one of my notes we're going to talk about next.
Okay.
Go ahead. Let's just start it now.
Yeah. Well, I just don't see Pop changing like everything he's done in his entire career. I think everybody knows, and White came in, and I give him credit, but I think, you know, that there's a difference between like garbage time minutes and G League minutes, and then actually, you know, being put into, you know, an important playoff game starting against, you know, obviously he's gonna have to guard either probably Iguodala or Klay Thompson, and that's rough for a rookie, no matter what. So I don't see Pop making that change anytime soon. You know, maybe he's earned some more minutes. Like I said, he was able to make a difference on defense, had a block, got some rebounds, things like that. So maybe he's earned that, but he's not gonna start. I really highly doubt that.
Yeah. See. Okay. So this one I'm torn on too, and I wrote it down. I even circled it on our notes because I wanted to bring this up because a lot of fans are obviously they were asking for Derek White even before the playoffs started.
Yeah.
To get minutes, and of course, as soon as he gets out there, he scores his first points, and then he gets that really good transition defensive block where he blocked with almost two hands that shot, that layup attempt. So I mean, he physically he has like what Murray has. He's 6'5". He's a long wing who the Warriors won't be able to take advantage of on the defensive end as much as they would Patty or Bryn Forbes or Tony Parker. And I, you know, the Spurs are underdogs in the series. You kind of, you know, let's be real here. We kind of know they're probably not going to win the series. Almost all of us on our staff picked them to lose this series in either 4 to 6 games. So if you kind of know the end road for this team, I would honestly just gamble with it. I would give the kid real minutes, whether it's starting or coming off the bench. And I agree with you where it comes out to Pop, because Pop does not have a history of giving a guy who's only played 17 NBA games real minutes in a real situation. Now, I know he did that with Murray last year, but that was only because somebody got hurt. Tony Parker got hurt. So in the event somebody got hurt, I could see Pop having to trust Derek White and just saying, hey, go out there and do what you can. But if everyone's healthy, I can't see Pop changing, like you mentioned, his 20 plus years of coaching history to do this kind of move, to give a rookie who's spent more time in the G League than the NBA those kind of minutes. From my opinion, I would say just roll the dice and try it. You know, you really have nothing to lose. Mind as well, the kid's athletic. He has a really high confidence right now coming from the G League Championship where he played very well. So I would just roll the dice. And, you know, he messes up in the first few minutes and, hey, take him out and you can't play him. But, you know, I just feel like you need some sort of X factor. You know, this roster, you can already tell Tony Parker's not going to give them as much. He's stable, but he's not going to give them anything in the scoring department on the defensive end. We saw how Bryn Forbes is a liability on defense, even though he does give him more on the scoring end. Patty too, he only got like 5 shots yesterday. The Warriors do a very good job of limiting him. They have a history of showing that. So, you know, I just like you and I both agree. We just don't think Pop will do that in this situation with Derek White.
The other thing is, and we talked about this on defense, but Patty Mills seemed kind of frantic with the ball, like just to start the game. Like he just seemed like he was rushing things a little bit, and I felt like that played a lot into Golden State's tone. I feel like when you get to like the half court offense, you've got to kind of slow things down. And that's how you take Golden State out of their, you know, their pace and how they succeed, especially when you're rushing and then you're turning the ball over in transition. You're going to pretty much get eaten alive by Golden State. I mean, that's what they love the most, especially in transition and getting to the other side of the court and scoring easy buckets. So that's where I feel like, even, you know, Manu Ginobili may not be a point guard per se, but I feel like, and you know, sometimes he had one bad pass, I think, to Aldridge, but I think you kind of trust him, and he's been there, and he's been in every, you know, so many playoff series. And so that's where I thought that adjustment made a lot of sense, especially offensively, because he came in and had kind of an impact immediately. And so I'd like to see how that would, you know, how that would change game two.
Do you think, this is also, before we move on to the offense, the Spurs' offensive adjustments, stay on the defense one more time. Do you think Pop should match Rudy Gay's minutes with Durant, where he's constantly having somebody who Durant has to play on the other end and kind of, I guess, kind of tire Durant out, but I don't know if Rudy can handle this. So Rudy only played 22 minutes and three quarters. Durant played 32 minutes and three quarters. So, like I mentioned, Durant plays the entire first quarter, the entire third quarter, and all 7.5 minutes of the second. Do you think Pop should actually think about that? Like, kind of like how he used to with Kawhi, where he would match him with Durant?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Durant's gotten pretty much the better of anybody that has defended him. I mean, Anderson, Green. So that's one of those things where you might see that for game two. And I think that's one thing that everybody said about Rudy Gay is how long he is. And that might be, you know, probably your best chance at trying to at least limit Durant a little bit. And he's still good enough a passer to get other people involved. But if they can take away him jacking up threes and scoring as much as he has been, I mean, that might be the one thing that helps.
Yeah, even if Gay doesn't have to guard Durant, but I'm just saying to have somebody like, because Durant does want to guard Gay on the other end, so that's something, right. You know, just to have somebody where Durant has to play more defense than just kind of helping out as a help defender on the other end. Okay, Mike, let's go and go to some offensive adjustments for the Spurs. Now, on this end, I don't have as many, you know, I have a few, but there's not much hope for their offense, especially if they have to make those swaps in the starting lineup because they can't play Patty Mills or Brent Forbes in as many minutes. I wrote down more 4-5 pick and rolls between Gay and Aldridge. We talked about how good that combination is and how much it does give the Spurs a little bit more chance of shot creation that are wide open, especially versus McGee when he's the center. I would say also, like I mentioned, kind of experiment with more of the Murray pick and rolls. And then also give Manu more minutes, whether that's starting or coming off the bench. Because like we said, like you just said a while ago, that Manu is one of their better pick and roll players still, even at that age of 40, where he can kind of create for himself or create for others. Outside of that, I just don't see the offensive adjustments the Spurs can really make. I mean, they're so limited in this series without Kawhi, who we will talk about pretty soon. But, I mean, they are just so limited in their weapons that they have.
I mean, it just comes down to, like, I mean, can players, like, make shots, and that's really, I mean, that's not really something you can speak to as far as adjustments, because it's just something that happens or doesn't. Just depends on the shots they take. I think they just need to be, you know, a little more patient to start the game, and that might help. And Vicky mentioned something in her game one adjustments about using up the full shot clock, and obviously that's not something you always look at. I mean, I think you get to Aldridge, you try to get him in position to score, and so the clock doesn't really play too much of a role in that. But I mean, I just think what she was saying is has more to do with, like, patience and not rushing things, because, like I said earlier, that'll play right into the hands of Warriors.
Yeah, and I read that too, and I remember on their second possession they actually got a 24-second violation. And I think that there are some shots that they could look at, like she wrote, like they could look at not rushing as much. But then also, I mean, the Warriors' defense is just so good with all that switching, their length, that even when the Spurs are on their motion sets, they're not going anywhere. They're kind of just, they end up going into a bad shot either way, because that defense is just, they're just basically shrinking the entire floor for San Antonio's offense. So yeah, I mean, Spurs cast listeners, unless the Spurs figure out some pop, you know, does some sort of magic, I can't figure out what other adjustments they can make outside of what Mike and I just discussed. Maybe there are more out there. Mike, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we will be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by ADT. When it comes to something as important as your family's safety, you need real protection with ADT. What does real protection mean for you? Well, real protection means you can get all of the latest innovation in smart home security from ADT, combined with 24/7 monitoring from the most trusted name in home security. You'll get a team of professionals designing and installing a secure smart home just for you, including 18,000 employees safeguarding you and your family, along with a connection to first responders. Your secure smart home includes everything from video doorbells and indoor and outdoor cameras to smart locks and lights controlled from the ADT Go app or the sound of your voice. You can also get professionally monitored carbon monoxide and smoke detectors. Everything is custom designed to fit your home, all from the nation's number one smart home security provider. You can even get safety on the go, in the car, or when the kids are at school with the ADT Go app with an SOS button. Ready to learn more? Visit ADT.com/podcast to learn more about how ADT can design and install a secure smart home just for you.
Thank you for listening to SpursCast, episode 491. My name is Paul Garcia, SpursCast host, and then I'm joined by Michael DeLeon of ProjectSpurs.com as we are breaking down game one of the Spurs' opening first-round series against the Golden State Warriors, and then we're also previewing game two here on this in this episode. Mike, let's go into another topic. It's kind of not deals with the series, but it kind of does deal with the series. So one name, one guy who got a lot of attention yesterday, he was trending on social media for a while, was Kawhi Leonard. You know, now that the Spurs are in the playoffs, they're getting national TV, they're playing one of the biggest marketed teams, which is the Warriors. This Kawhi story is going to start blowing up a little bit more, unless his camp comes out, or his pop says, his what does Pop call him? Oh, his group comes out and says something. Pop actually just calls him his group. Anyway, so, you know, during the broadcast, ABC starts talking about him, Mark Jackson, Mike Breen, Jeff Van Gundy, how this is like one of the most common situations for a star athlete to ever go through. You know, there's just still no certainty. You saw the reporter Lisa Salter said she spoke with Pop, where Pop basically said, you know, his group still says he's not ready to go. We'll know more so once his group says he's ready, but obviously that doesn't look like he's going to play in the playoffs. And then on the other side, it looks bad for the Spurs' side, that, or Kawhi's side, should I say, that Steph is injured too. He's out for the series most likely, and he's at least there warming up in front of the team, you know, doing his rehab in front of the fans. He's there on the sideline, you know, supporting his guys, cheering with them, helping them with strategy. And according to Pop, as recently as today that you and I are recording this on Sunday afternoon, Kawhi is still in New York rehabbing. This is what Pop basically says. So, you know, with this Kawhi situation still his side is still so quiet, there's going to be all these narratives being written right now. And one that already came out was Saturday evening after the game ended. Sam Amick of USA Today, a big columnist in the national media, wrote a piece about how the Clippers are already one team that sources say, according to him, are going to throw their hat in the ring to try to send a package for Kawhi Leonard. One thing that was also very telling from Amick about how distant the Spurs and Kawhi are right now is that he spoke with Pau Gasol during the game, before the game even started, and Pau says they haven't seen Kawhi in weeks. The players, his own teammates, have not seen him in weeks. Amick did say that one teammate does text with Kawhi pretty often, and that teammate even texted him before game one started. So he didn't say who that teammate was. I'm not going to try to put a theory out of who it is. Just going back to that Clippers package, in case they were to ever try to make the Spurs were to entertain an offer from them. The Clippers do have two first round picks projected to go 12 and 13. That one of their picks can be in the 5 to 30 range from Detroit. And then what else is right here? Oh, there was also something. It was kind of funny, I guess, because after the game ended, there was this thing trending where these people thought Kawhi was playing Fortnite, so that online game. So apparently, during the game, somebody just put up some random clip that was just like an empty Snapchat story, and it said something like, "I'm playing my first game ever on Fortnite," or something like that. And then people were like, "That's Kawhi," and then it's like it became an actual story. There was people talking about it on Twitter, even to the point where I had to research. I'm like, "This guy does not have a Snapchat," and so no, it was a false thing somebody just made up. But of course, it blew up. And you really don't know what he's doing. I mean, they say he's rehabbing New York, but who knows if he's playing Fortnite or he's taking a nap or what. Or maybe he is just working out. You know, Pop, as of today, Sunday that we're recording this, he had this quote already. The reporters asked him in his media availability, you know, is Kawhi going to come back for the series? And he said, you'll have to ask Kawhi and his group about that. And that's today's where Pop confirmed that Kawhi is still in New York, as far as the Spurs know, still rehabbing his quad to hopefully try to come back for the series. You know, what is your take on this, and how much worse do you think it's going to get? And as the silence keeps going,
I don't know. It's a lot of times it's just kind of one of those things where I just kind of laugh at it, because it's strange, like how much people's opinions changed based on like no new information. It's we still have pretty much the same information we've had for like a month, but like yesterday, you know, you saw people were like, you know, people have gone from like supporting Kawhi to now, oh, they're like, they're done with him and want to trade him and everything like that. So it's just strange how, like I said, how much change. And a lot of that is kind of like the whole media, machine and everything. Like everything's a headline now, and they, you know, a lot of people make a story out of nothing. There's a quote and it gets made into an entire story, and there's a lot of speculation kind of put on it. And I mean, I wouldn't like change your. I wouldn't make an opinion or change your opinion until you actually hear something like concrete, and you're probably not going to get that until after this, you know, the playoffs are over or whatever. So that's just interesting. The whole Clippers thing also was kind of, to me, that's just like, I mean, any team that like didn't make the playoffs and needs to improve would obviously look at, if they see that there might be a problem there, then they'd obviously talk about possibly putting together a trade to try to get him, especially with as much has been made about him being from LA and everything. So that's one thing. That's another story that's kind of gotten, I feel like, built up into a little more than it should have been. It to me, it's just one of those things that you write at the end of the story. It's a note type of thing. But yeah, I mean, it was just crazy how much of the game was like dominated by that. And I was just like, this has been the story for like a long time, and it's just now like getting so much like airtime. I thought was a little crazy, but it's just going to continue, I feel like. And you know, somebody commented that it's probably going to continue until somebody says something, and Kawhi's not the type of player to say anything, and he just isn't. Even when he's, I mean, I think you and I have seen this in pregames and stuff like that, and you go up and ask questions, he's not a man of many words, and it's just not his thing. So, you know, I think this whole, like, cycle is going to keep continuing throughout the playoffs as long as Spurs are in the playoffs. I don't see it ending, I would just say take a lot of these stories kind of with a grain of salt, because not a lot of people really know exactly what's going on right now.
Yeah, okay. I agree with you, and I think the only way this kind of dies down, all this noise, is if he does at least make an appearance, even if he doesn't play, but just, you know, sits behind the team, either whether it's in Oakland or if it's back in San Antonio for games 3 or 4 or beyond, if the series goes beyond that. I think that if he doesn't, then, you know, you're right, where people are just going to, or just writers and fans are all going to just start making up, not making it up. Some of it is getting it from other GMs and stuff and agents, but, you know, starting to create this narrative, and they're going to continue to drive this narrative. And the longer he's away from the team and as quiet as he is, the more this narrative will continue to basically snowball, where, you know, a lot, like I mentioned, you know, they're playing the one team that gets a lot of media attention. So these stories are going to start coming out on Kawhi. You know, especially as the silence continues. And I don't know, maybe his group needs to just, you know, he did come out, like you mentioned, he came out and said something, you know, like they asked him if he wanted to be for Spurred for Life, and he said for sure, something like that. But, you know, maybe his group can, like, put out some press releases where they say, you know, he's rehabbing and this went well today. You know, just something where, I guess, that it shows more than just the silence, because right now the narrative is being written and driven by all that silence, where people can just kind of make their own opinions and their own stories up, because there's no one's going to basically, you know, hold them accountable for it, as long as Kawhi's side stays quiet. So, you know, that's just kind of the world we live in, where media is taking over and stories take over. And especially with silence, you can kind of just make up your own opinions sometimes or get sources. One thing Amick did write about in that piece is that you were right. Like, GMs are kind of just hoping that this falls apart for the Spurs, because they do want their chance at sending a trade package for Kawhi this coming summer, in the event of trying to land him. So, you know, we'll continue to follow the Kawhi situation as it continues going on into the future. All right, Mike, our last topic, let's go ahead and preview game 2. So game 2 will take place Monday night at 9:30, if you're living in Texas, which is going to be in Oakland, basically. That's why it's a late tip-off. The Warriors, according to Vegas, are already favored by 10 points. That was as of last night. I checked the lines, and yeah, Golden State's favored by 10. Just like we always do, Mike, who do you have in this game, game 2, between the Spurs and Warriors?
You know, playoffs are all about adjustments. I mean, that's always what it's been about. It's a series of adjustments, and who makes the right adjustments. You know, the thing is, offensively, like we talked about, there's not a lot of adjustments you can make. So, I'm gonna say game 2. I mean, I think you'll I think it'll be closer than it was game 1, but I still see Golden State winning this one.
Okay, I agree with you too. I think that the Spurs will make their adjustments, where they're going to be a little bit better defensively to hang with, you kind of keep it close to Golden State. In the end, you know, they just have so much firepower. They have Durant, they have Klay Thompson, they have just so many weapons. I mean, just what do you do right now if you're San Antonio? You're just, unless Kawhi comes back, you don't have a lot of options. So I'm taking the Warriors as well in this one on Monday, should I say. Thanks, Mike, for joining me for Spurscast episode 491. Spurscast listeners, if you're on Twitter, please follow him at MDeLeon. At MDeLeon, read his work at projectspurs.com. Continue to send us your questions using hashtag SpursCast. If you're on Twitter, follow us at Project Spurs, at AT League _NBA, at the SpursCast, at Project Spurs Network. Visit us at ProjectSpurs.com, AnalyzingTheLead.com, and ProjectSpurs.net. And if you're on iTunes, please leave us a rating and review. Thank you. Have a great day.